instead of I need to connect, and that's where Anne says engage, start thinking about what you, stop worrying what you can't change and start engaging in the things that you can change. And things like that where I, instead of waiting for God to sort it out, because I know now I'm as high as it gets, as in sorting it out, I now have to do something. It's not a have to, but what I need to engage in this world.
Well, when you were a kid, disconnecting. In junior high and in high school, you didn't think much about things outside of your immediate concerns. Like, how could you be going to church and believing that, and then not notice all these other things going on TV and other thought forms?
I would say, but through high school and stuff, you're still not too committed because you sort of know. So if I can say in high school I believed in Jesus and stuff, but now you want to start having sex, and that's not allowed. And so then you go through this bit where it's a confusion all the time.
Did you get real horny, Sean? Did you really want to have sex? Let's hear about that.
Well, no. But all the boys wanted to have sex, and you wanted to be with the boys, and they wanted sex, and it's this whole dilemma.
Yeah. What do you mean you couldn't have sex? So what, you want to be with the boys? What was that desire?
Well, it's our human nature. You like the boys.
Well, you get horny. Would you get horny?
No, I didn't even know. Bob, when I got told about sex, I didn't even know there was sensation involved.
Well, okay, how do you get into that crazy? How could you not feel your body?
Well, obviously when I started doing it, that's when you start realizing, okay.
But, Sean, you weren't trained. You were trained to get a man. That's, you know, there was no sensation there. That's what we were raised to do, was to get married, find a man and get married.
Yeah. And even when I can remember when I found out of movement in sex, I thought it was simply the man places his penis into the woman's vagina. I can remember this little book my dad gave me that explained it like that. Then you sort of see motion. What's this in and out stuff going on? And you have to... and that's, then you realize there's sensation involved. And that's all the things that... I think, well, why didn't anybody tell us that? It's because
were you
it's
married
taboo.
When that happened?
No, that's before, luckily. That's when you're the naughty Christian, I could say.
Yeah, so how old were you when you were having this dilemma of having sex but feeling bad about it?
15.
Well, that's pretty young.
Yeah.
So,
well,
so
if you look at it, my Christian grandmother was married. She had my dad when she was 18. In those days, they had their... They got married very quickly and had their kids young.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's changed very quickly.
Yeah. So the your mind discourage the enjoyment of the movement.
Yeah, but then while you're a Christian, you don't think about the enjoyment. You just think about the condemnation now.
Yeah.
Because you've now...
So why would you let those thoughts of what the Christians believe dominate your mind so much?
Well, for me, Bob, it was hope for a better world. I've always wanted to change the world. And
so you thought the world was changeable. You thought there was something wrong with the world.
And at least we've got a Jesus that can help us.
So it's you couldn't have been exposed to enough other ideas. You never went to a class on Marxism or on transhumanism or something?
I would say when I was 18 is when I started looking into conspiracy theories and things like that. But I also then went to Bible college, so I had lots of Bible bashed into my head, but at the same time I started looking at conspiracy theory and other things.
So if you went to university, regular university, you would have heard a lot of different ideas. Your mind might have been different earlier.
Yeah.
That is a big divide.
My stuff started with David Icke.
Non-university. What?
Yeah. The first things I sort of, and I spoke to Anne about that before, is I read David Icke stuff when Diana was killed, and that's when I started going, and then seeing the pyramid structures everywhere, that type of real conspiracy stuff, and then it was still real conspiracy, but that's when I probably started opening up to more things.
And to open up to what?
Other things, to look into stuff more deeper.
So then what happened? How did you change? Like you did come to Iondom and listen to Ion as a devil the first few months. You know, you were listening as a Christian. And then something started to change. I don't know what happened to you.
Well, it was simultaneous. It was either devil or Holy Spirit. That was the block it felt into my mind control of this Holy Spirit, which I saw as what you can't see, non-physical, that's connected to everything and part of the Trinity of what God is. God is not God without, or the Trinity I believed in had to have a Holy Spirit for it to be God. But the Holy Spirit by itself was not God. So that made me the whole time flip between, oh my God, is this the Holy Spirit? But again, it went against all the Christian, it looked occultish almost for you to accept something like that. And I can see
but what is it that flipped you? Did you take the drops or something?
No, just listening to Ian and Bob, because I was already sort of finished with the Christian thing by then. When Ian said he's got summonses, I can remember one day screaming, or sort of saying, well, if it's God, if you're there, you've got to appear and talk. I'm not doing this anymore.
I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
You got to show up. That's what McLuhan did. McLuhan did that. He says, if you're real, show me a sign. And I think he said he prayed a lot, and then he said a sign was shown him, but he never told anybody what that was.
Oh, they've got a thing for that in the Christian. They say, a wicked and adulterous nation seeketh after a sign, but no sign shall be given to them, but the sign of Noah. That's what they use if you say you want a sign. They give you that verse.
But which sect is that? Is that Baptist?
No, that's Christian. That's the Bible. So if you say to a Christian, I want a sign, tell your God to show me a sign, they'll quote the scripture, a wicked and adulterous nation seeketh after a sign. So you'll feel wicked and adulterous.
You say that's Christian. You know, I've talked to Baptists or people who are in fringe Protestant or fringe something, and they say, we're Christians. Catholics aren't Christians. They're Catholics. That's wrong. We're all Christians. That's what you sound like. So what were you, Methodist or interdenominational? What did they call your church?
I did the Happy Clappy Churches.
These were like hustler traveling evangelical ministers who went into a little town and got something going. Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we did things called
Happy Clappy. We never heard that before.
Is that like, that must be like revivals in the US?
Like you put a tent up in the town?
Tent revival.
I was part of a thing called the Healing Rooms. So we would go out in the streets and tell them, try and heal people by praying for them. If only I had a bag of drops.
See what happens when you don't go to college? You end up fucking at the lowest levels of culture. You're walking around with hustlers trying to clap people into health.
Talk about being in a cult.
Talk about being in a cult. Now, Clinton, that's a cult.
Okay. No, they call themselves Christians. That's a religion.
Yeah.
Huge difference, apparently.
There's no denomination. They're just Christians.
Going after people,
Christians.
Telling them, trying to
they start reading the Bible. They think that makes them Christian. Remember, the Catholics went for 1,500 years without the Bible. 1,500 years. They never read anything.
Well,
think of that. The longest part of the Catholic, the longest church in Christianity never read the Bible for 1,500 years. I don't know if they ever did it after the printing press, but maybe some of the priests did. But that's pretty incredible. What were they? That had to be a cult. And they were. They were an empire. They ran wars.
Yeah.
Talk about rules. Well, people weren't even allowed. You know,
I'm sure at least
be the priest.
You don't think at least most of the churches, like, yeah, the clergy had the Bible. It's just the people didn't have Bibles, right?
Yeah, the majority of the people, they didn't have nothing but the chants or whatever the mass did. Remember, they did do plays on the Gothic cathedral steps. You know, lots of theater and lots of act culture, but I guess it'd be oral culture. They had no visuality at all.
Yeah. They had stained glass windows and iconography and all that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's
and,
it.
And they were forced to be, you had to be in the community was small enough that you could force a thought system on them. So probably most of them hated it. They were just forced to go to church and do the scene.
Well, until the high-tech information environment of the printed book came into acceptance, well, what better could there be, right? Like, what do you want? By what standards are we comparing? By modern standards by modern standards of liberal excess freedom, they were living in a horrible state, right? But that's like complaining about medicine before Louis Pasteur, right? Like,
So they were like Sean. You were a Christian. That's the way the Catholics were for 1,500 years. Assuming they liked the community, they liked the getting together and singing, whatever they did, maybe they had nice mystical experiences from it.
Well, and then there's always Byzantium. No one ever talks about the Byzantine Empire.
Yeah, those guys, they were weird. They survived. You ever heard McLuhan explain why they survived? Because they weren't alphabetized. So when Egypt cut off the papyrus to Rome and Rome collapsed, the Byzantium was able to carry on. They weren't subject to the papyrus thing.
Oh, they got no paper. Oh well, we don't care. We don't use that shit anyway. Right?
But they had you know amazing palaces and stuff. Maybe were they part of Arabia? They weren't the Arabs. The Arabs were Muslims by 700. So the Byzantiums, they were just a Christian surrounded by Arabs, I guess. I actually don't know much about how they got along from 700 to, say, 1200. Now, Ion says the Ottoman Empire goes way back. We say it starts at 1500, but no, they went back 1,000, 2,000 years, and Byzantium was part of that. So there was a whole empire that our history's got really not much information on.
True. Nobody talks about the Byzantine Empire. I bet you it's huge. I bet you if we did, it would just be Russian propaganda anyway. Something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we could talk to Ian about it. I only give you details. Ian can tell a good story about anything.
That's a talent.
Yeah, we should do a course on Byzantium. Now, Ian makes a big deal out of the fact they have John the Baptist's head. Right, Bert? They always talking about
yes.
They got the head over there somewhere in the Topkapi palace or something. And also they were really good at the magical stuff, going to other worlds, and they had that's why they dominated for so long. Anyways, Ion says that New York City as it is today was available off of Babylon. Because there's no time, nothing is sequential like we learn in the book history. you talk about weird. And my favorite one is when you dive into the Pacific Ocean, it is way bigger than the universe that the Hubble telescope scanned.
Oh.
So that means the Earth is not fucking round, or it's not contained in a sphere. You can go into the Pacific. Yeah. It's a hallucinatory, surrealistic map. The Pacific Ocean is so huge, it's bigger than the universe we can see. So where is that happening? You know, does the ocean go into other worlds and there's no spherical boundary? It's not round. The Earth is not round. Not necessarily flat.
It's so ironic. I'm just going to say, it's ironic that I came on here to talk about time in Western man, and now, like, here we are 3 hours later, and you're going, yeah, time isn't linear at all. Yeah, right? Yeah, of course. Simultaneous. They had New York and, Babylon.
Here's one for you, Clinton. Here's one. We don't know whether the Earth is moving. We have not yet proven whether or not the Earth is moving at all.
Relative to what?
There was a movie. I posted it on Facebook in response, I think, to one of Roxy's posts. There was a documentary from 2014 called The Principle. And the first half of the documentary goes through the history of how we arrived at the Copernican Principle. That the idea that the Earth occupies no special or favored position in the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
And through the course of explaining the history of how we arrived at that, there were a bunch of experiments set up and proved certain and validated certain things around it, but no one was ever able to validate whether we were seeing the Earth moving or everything else moving and the Earth remaining stationary, you know, because you don't know whether it's like when you're sitting in a parked car beside another parked car and the car beside you starts to move. For a minute, you feel like you're moving. You don't know who's doing the moving. And so the first half of the documentary is basically explaining that that was never proven. And for 500 years, they tried to distinguish that phenomenon. They tried to prove that the Earth was actually moving. And they haven't been able to. Well, then, and I don't remember the name of the physicist, or cosmologist maybe, that decided to determine if he could see a pattern in the visuals of cosmic microwave radiation, the radiation that supposedly is remaining from the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
And so he plotted them out himself and determined the pattern. All of this radiation in space is pointing and is in alignment with the eclipses and the solstices of the planet Earth.
Yeah, I saw that video.
And then NASA repeated the experiment with all of their data because they had much better and bigger visual of measuring this cosmic microwave radiation, and they validated what he came up with. So now the most current scientific validation shows that everything is centered on the planet Earth, everything in the universe and beyond our universe is actually in alignment with the eclipses and the solstices of the planet Earth. Which,
it completely blows it out. That makes sense because there was something I was wondering that I was looking at, and you really can't see it. With the Chinese landed on the moon and the dark side of the moon, we've never seen the dark side of the moon, which means the moon does go around the Earth, but it doesn't turn. It doesn't rotate.
Right.
It just goes around on the side that we see all the time. So you're going to ask Ion some questions on that, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. That's what I've got. Okay. Yeah. It's on my Ion questions. I'm going to go back and listen to the movie again and get, because there were multiple questions I had for Ion in that movie.
Good.
But that's a way, and that's why the idea of reconsidering all the rules that you can identify that you have, Clinton, prepares mm-hmm. you for the future of all the changes in the definitions of physical reality. That and that's what Ion is preparing us for, being prepared and not getting paranoid for what we haven't. We ain't seen nothing yet, according to Ion.
So, you, Gene, did it say it was geocentric, Earth-centered?
Well, the most current science still hasn't proven whether the Earth is moving at all, and it actually validates that the Earth might be, yes, that it might be the favored position in the universe. Everything might be pointing directly at us. Well, one question I have for the people who produce the film, as well as for Ion, is we know that experiments are accommodated for the effect that the observer affects the experiment.
Right.
So if there's a human on Mars that measures the microwave radiation, is it all going to point to Mars in some way? Does it depend on where the human conducting the experiment is?
That was my first thought. Given everything else you say about the film, that's why I like these constraints, because I had that thought as you were saying the story, as you know, because I'm not right.
So you're already going beyond the physical, the mainstream constraints of science. If you had that thought, I would say, you know what I mean?
Mainstream science teaches that observation changes things, and that's quantum theory. Like, that is mainstream science.
Well, but it wasn't addressed in the movie. Why wasn't it addressed in the movie?
Well, I just pulled up the principle, and all the scientists who are in it complain about being misrepresented and repudiated it, said that had they known what the film was about, they were lied to about the premise.
Yes. Well, there was in 2014 there was a whole bunch of backlash, and there is a YouTube video where the producers of the film actually talk about that. And that's why it didn't get much of an airing, because mainstream kiboshed it. And there were actually a couple people that were interviewed in the film, and they said in the news that it was a lie, that they were never in the film. And then they had to backtrack, because they were filmed, you know, and they were in the documentary. But they were getting so much flack that they were trying to save their reputations in the beginning.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, the YouTube.
I'll have to check into it more. I mean, the contentious point is the idea that all of the cosmic background radiation is the
pattern
geocentric right? Yeah. That anyway, cool.
Let me bring in another point. After listening to Ion for a year or so, I started telling people we were bigger than Saturn because Ion changes the 3D visual space, and it says we create the world. So it's not that the Earth is the center of something. We're the center of everything, our reality. I don't know about you, few people, to say it's relative. But the thing is, we think we're inside the Earth or universe container. You get rid of the container, what I utter is what Ion says creates reality. So the human is the center of the universe, not some map that you read in books or someone shows you through the telescope. That's the outer kingdom, what Ion calls the outer kingdom. So
yes,
the thing that creates the worlds, and I don't know if it's done collectively or by ourselves, that creative thing that Ion says you are, you can be whatever you want to be in form, because your cells are more important than your body, so your cells, they respond to the words, and they can create a different form. So that's in ancient tribal peoples, they talk about, you know, their great-great-grandfather could turn into a tiger or something. So maybe we could do that. That means that we're the center of the universe, not some earth container. So that's how I go around that question, whether the sun is the center or the earth is the center, using ion.
Yeah, yeah. The whole idea of there being a center of the universe in the outer exterior world presupposes that there's some sort of grid or space as a substrate underneath everything that needs a coordinate system, right? When in fact there is all just of these bodies in relative positions expanding outward from, well, that's the question. I don't know enough. Oh, that's the thing. I don't know enough. Astrophysics to. I haven't read up on, you know, the positionality of the Big Bang and how where everything turned out afterwards. But yeah. Yeah.
You know what?
The sun isn't the center of anything, right? We only put the sun at the center because it's easier to draw a sun with surrounded by, you know, eight ellipses for the eight planets, right? Right? It's easier to draw one sun in the middle and eight ellipses than to draw an Earth and then draw a whole bunch of wacky lines all over the place, you know? That would represent the sun going around the Earth and then the circle, right? Like it would be a spirograph. If you draw the you know, the solar system any other way than with the sun at the center, it turns into a spirograph. So just stick the sun in the center, get some circles. It's easy.
Yeah, but let's start walking around saying you're the center, and your being, which is eternal and huge, is way bigger than the world you're looking at. It actually has no dimension. So it's huge and it's tiny at the same time. Walk around thinking that way. Someone shows you a map and says, well, that's just your book. I'm not a fucking book. I like what Ion says in answer to Darwin. He says, no fucking human came out of the ass of a monkey.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Say that to a Darwinist. But we have an interesting report. Michael in South Africa, he says this. I did the ultimate cult test in Iondom. And this he showed up about 7 years ago. He says, I did the ultimate cult test in Iondom. After being deeply involved for months, I left without explanation. Nobody even asked me where I was. It was quite annoying, actually. You could tell you're in a cult only when you leave and they try to get you back. This cult won't come after you if you leave. But it will discuss your absence on radio in a less than inflammatory manner. That means in a polite manner. Aside from not being a cult, what this Iondom cult has over every other cult is it is just more interesting. I'm never going to join because there's no way to leave. Very good, Michael.
That's a good one.
Summed it up.
Yeah.
Man,
we didn't even care that anybody left. We don't talk about them. No, we talk about them, but, you know, whatever way we're going to do. Yes, you can't say how we're going to talk about them.
God. And I wish I could find, remember Wendy's explanation of why this is so far from a cult? It was on Dupes. I wonder if I can find it. It was similar, but she had a good explanation.
Wendy found a guru nearby in her neighborhood in Calgary. Here we are talking about her. Yeah, Wendy left. We don't know why, but we found out she found a local guy that was more convenient than calling into a conference call and half the stuff said was incomprehensible. It wasn't very satisfying for her. She being a hustler kid from Mississauga in Toronto, outside of
Toronto. Hustler kid.
Yeah, you know, she was a high school sweetheart kind of girl, I think. You know, maybe, I don't know if she was in the cheerleaders, but she could have been. She was pretty enough.
Well,
she was like Sean, just ignorant, you know, just grew up in the world and didn't have a fucking thought in her head other than, you know, happy clappy tribalism that she accidentally ran into. I mean, you got to think about it. What kind of state of mind was Sean walking around in, you know, to... where did she get these ideas? The ideas of maybe we want to make a better world. It's just nutty, the ideas that people have. I was the dumbest kid ever. I had no fucking ideas. I didn't understand anything, and I just kept that way. And it turned out to be the answer to the universe. Be a fucking dumb asshole, and you'll be so fucking stupid that somebody will show up and be the second coming, and you wouldn't even give a fuck. That's the answer, man. I'm amazed at how little I took in of anything, even though I did go around and meet all the greats. Like I heard, okay, there's a guy up in Toronto. He's a famous Canadian. Oh, I'll go out and meet him. Oh, he can let me sit here every Monday night. I don't have to pay. I can just sit here and listen to this guy talk. So I did it for 8-10 years, and eventually I remembered a lot of the stuff he said.
Well, and there's the doubleness, Bob. There's the doubleness, because you think it's ridiculous that, you know, so many people grown up wanting to save the world, and here you are, the most serious, in the most unserious way, saving the world. You're the one that's doing it.
I went around and studied everybody like they were a zoo. And I was this weird fucking guy who they're trying to take his tenure away from. This is an interesting phenomenon. That would be on Monday. On Tuesday, I'd go over to William River Thompson's seminar. Watch him try to save the world. Then on Thursday, I'd go to LaRouche. Then on Friday, I'd fly down to L.A. and go to a Zappa concert. Then I'd start over again on Monday. Back to McLuhan. Just rotate.
Never at the zoo.
And then because I was such a nice-looking guy and a friendly guy, the insiders always befriended me and told me all the secrets. Of the cult. Now, that's what Dave Worster used to say. When I started talking on the radio about having 10 holy offices, he would say, well, Bob went around and studied all these cults. Now he presents all these cults. Which is partly true, I guess. But they were benign cults. So here's Kyle. Kyle's stupid like John. He became a Christian. He says, I'm still a Christian and still love the Bible. Ion has made me understand how to reach the higher levels of the Bible, which I think I have unlimited possibilities for learning. I just like Ion and Bob for entertainment. The information is a bonus. But the drops have changed me, and the show has opened my mind to non-Christian thinking as beneficial also. Well, I take that back, Kyle. That's the first time you ever fucking wrote something intelligent. There it is. Kyle finally has arrived at some level of balanced mind. Usually he was always correcting Ion.
Yay, Kyle.
Very good, Kyle. I like that. How to reach... He's now saying Ion is offering the higher levels of the Bible. Wow. Kyle wouldn't have said that 5 years ago. See, in the long run, Clinton, we persuade everybody. Everybody comes over to our side eventually.
Well, the dissolution of belief in an objective real whose you know, truths can be, pulled out of the bedrock of existence through the falsifiable principle of Karl Popper, which cuts away untruths through constant scientific testing, right? I mean, I really like believing in objective reality, and if Ionum says that the outer kingdom is going away, and if we can talk about blatantly impossible shit like the Pacific Ocean being larger than the universe, and just to be just one small example, then I don't like the idea of the erosion of all of the objective truths that I hold on to, that I cling to as objectively yes. real, which allow yes. me, which do keep me manifestly within a very material world where everything is the result of, you know, human minds interacting with objects. And I love McLuhan because he brings a living human meaning into our human-made artifacts just at the right level where it's kind of spiritual, but it's kind of, you know, bound to the, you know, this idea of words made manifest in our, you know, outerings and utterings and whatnot. Like, that's just the right level of mixture that I'm willing to go to stretch my mind, which allows me to, you know, like, feel balanced. So,
yeah.
That's why, stepping outside of that, you look like a cult when you, with, through the tactics of eroding that through your and I mean, you certainly have a cult of personality in the sense that any intelligent person who's surrounded by groupies and fans does tend to foster, right? So that would be the origin there, right? Of my trepidation.
You're like Sean at the other end. I heard a lot of stuff. I didn't know how to hold on to it. I didn't know how to be a Darwinist or a Republican. Nothing stuck. Things stuck to you. You took certain ideas, the high end of our culture, and you stick to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so fucking stupid. Nothing sticks to me. I really have no fucking mind. But been around a long time, though. You know, I got a memory. I have good memory. So I just do what the humans do. They give me the clues of what to say, so I act human. Say ideas. But I would say the big advantage I had over everybody was I lived with the smartest fucking person on the planet, Carolyn Dean. And I went around and saw that nobody could equal her natural ability at being a phenomenal person. And she can't do anything bad. Does everything well, everything. Mm. So I actually had, it was like being with a inhuman goddess and walking around and comparing everything to her. That's probably what I was doing, partly. That's why I had this detachment.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now seeing, you know, how smart she is on Mondays.
Yes.
There you go.
So I think I judge people by sex. I'd look at somebody and say, is that guy any good in bed? Is she any good in bed? How are they at sex? That's what I fucking interested in. And, you know, McLuhan one night said in the seminar, he said, sex is the most important thing in life. That shocked a lot of people because, you know, they put him on a pedestal as some kind of detached guy. Now, there's a story of the priest. Corinne was showing her home to the priest, and she takes him up to their bedroom, and there's a kind of a hole in the bed. It's like, you know, it goes a crevice going down. And she says, you know, Marshall likes the bed, something like that. You know, she referred to the sex act to the priest.
You mean he's fucking his mattress, or he likes it in bed? Oh, all right.
No, he fucks Grin so much there was a hole in the mattress.
Oh,
this is wearing out.
And she bragged about it.
Damn. Well, see, that's like I said, I'm reading Philip Marchand's biography.
Yes, and you'll find it in there. You'll find it in there. Tell me when you get there.
Okay, for sure. Yeah, all I've got so far is his first girlfriend and just how McLuhan is ashamed that sex has anything to do with how he loves women, but it's wrong because it makes him feel horny, and then that's a sin, and he's all conflicted about that, like as a teenager.
Yeah, did you see? And that's before he's a Catholic, but he says he implies he's horny for a week or two, and then he goes, oh, I'm glad that's over. Did you see that part?
Yeah. exactly.
I'm glad that's over. Like, well, he's probably masturbating for 2 weeks. He couldn't stop. And then suddenly it went away, and he never fucked again. Or he never thought of it. You know, you look at some of these movies, like the marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Very good TV show, comedian in 58, 59. But it shows the way people are in the 50s. It's really hard to take. They're also submissive and repressed and fucked up. And like the Masters and Johnson TV series showed that. It's getting increasingly uncomfortable watching any other period, any other decades before now.
Hmm.
I don't find it entertaining. The way people act, the way people were so limited, or they're presented as very limited.
Mm.
I don't know, what other TV shows?
Well, in what way, Bob? Like, just the suppression
of... Mad Men. I watched Mad Men. That was showing a certain, patriarchy or... The men dominating in the offices and the women just going along with it.
Having to get around it, having to, if they want
to. Yeah, having all these strategies to either put up with it or avoid
it.
And
be very detached.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Phil says, I proudly left school with no qualifications, a certified dumbass. My brother was head boy of the school and an exemplary scholar. He is currently reading The Guardian whilst careering towards oblivion, and I'm here listening to Bob.
Yay, Phil!
We have to put that up as a blurb, a promo. My fucking brother... The scholar is reading The Guardian, careering towards oblivion. Now I'm here listening to Bob, yes. Good career choices there, Phil, or entertainment choices. Amy's going nuts. Amy says, Ion all the way, after complimenting Clinton. Ion all the way, so love the journey of growing all the bodies. Then she says, timing. Vibration alignment, vortex, light bulb, number nine, with exclamation marks. So those are separate sentences. Timing, vibration alignment, vortex, and a light bulb, and then number nine. And then she says, I'm hearing the shift. Awesome show. So I ask her, the shift in what, Amy? And she says, in Clinton and all talking, agreeing to disagree is going great. Then RA331SC says, a community moving to singularity. Then Amy laughs and has a lot of exclamation, weird word signs, meaning I guess she's swearing or something. And then Michael talks about how we're not a cult. Then Mondo Rock says, McLuhan said NASA was cheap science fiction. Then Amy says, tonight's an eclipse. Then Amy says, more radiation, RNA drop party. Then Phil says, Mr. Science is going to be severely challenged going forward. I think he's talking about you, Clinton. Clinton is going to be severely challenged going forward. You'll end up reading The Guardian if you don't watch yourself, Clinton. Well, it's good to see everybody participating. So that's the way it's going to go here. No music. We'll play Nelson four more sessions. Then we'll play something else. Then we get into talking. If nobody shows up, I'm not waiting around. So none of this shit like Jean does. She goes and plays in the pool hall for 5-7 hours, comes home, sleeps, calls up on the 20th hour with 50 minutes.
What happened, Bob?
Oh, shit,
what happened?
I missed the show, right.
What happened?
You'll find I ain't here after 3 hours if nobody's here. So start come. That means, Bert, you're going to have to start coming earlier, I think. I mean, your schedule doesn't let you tune in until 5 or 6 hours into it, right?
No, I tuned in at 3. 3 o'clock, 3 a.m. my time. So it was like an hour after it started.
Okay, so, and then it's usually music, and then you don't usually come in to talk till
right.
the fifth or sixth hour.
I can come right in now.
You can come in right away. So this is a, I'm trying to have a patina of, you start, remember, oh, sorry, Clinton. Clinton's got muted. How'd that happen, Clinton? Oh, you must have got knocked off. Okay, all right. So, you guys got to perform better
you
with Ion.
You want to have a patina, you said.
Yeah, a patina of seriousness in preparing for this. You guys got to get some serious questioning going on. Now, if you haven't got questions, just go back 7 years, click on a payday or cash flow, and listen to the questions, and just write those questions people ask down, because Ion says, ask all the questions again.
Yes.
The same questions. So there should not be any paucity of questions.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, you guys should know. You should know the seriousness of it in a way. You should know a lot. You've learned a lot over the last couple of years, different areas. You should bring those to the table, those topics and their questions.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because I just started writing. I had a list of questions right after Ion left, and last week I started adding to it, so I'm going to look at it more to make it more refined, because I have some questions.
I've got a document.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I've got one that goes back. It's 2017, 2018, and now 2019.
So you composed, Bert, a bunch of questions after Ion was gone.
Right. I was just like, you know, I would be listening to something and just write it down. I had some ready for the week that Ion left, the following week. So then I've just been adding to it, and I just added one yesterday, actually. So because there's a lot of information. I mean, it's fun to go listen to the archive because you hear a different perspective. Like I just heard something that I didn't know that oxygen is going to become a sugar.
Oxygen is becoming sugar.
Oxygen is going to become like sugar. It's going to become a sugar. It's not going to be the oxygen that we are aware of right now. It's going to go away, and it's going to become a sugar.
That's on a chemical level as a sugar.
Yes, chemical. Yes. No, it's that's what I say. It's a shame that a lot of, I mean, that's something that I read in the, let me read this. I read it from the LaRouche group. Bob, would someone consider LaRouche like a communist?
Well, he started off as a member of the Socialist Party in the States in the 40s and 50s. And he later said that he joined them because they were the only intellectually active people in the dull 50s. You know, with the McCarthy era, he always claimed to be a super intellectual, so he wanted to go where people were thinking and talking. So he was a socialist. But he always was sort of coming up with his own theories, because he was a management consultant, and he decided to make his life work to defeat Norbert Wiener and the MIT information theory guys. He hated what they said. And he would have been 1922, he talks about 48 to 52, so when he was 26 to 30, he did his in-depth criticism and mapped out his Leibnizian philosophy to counter the MIT people. And that's the same years that McLuhan was looking at Norbert Wiener and saying they were more exciting than the poetry journals, more interesting. So McLuhan came up with a way of critiquing Norbert Wiener or satirizing him. So LaRouche, in the mid-60s, he was considered an eccentric in the Socialist Party. If you talk to people who knew him way back then, didn't really get much response or attention. But then he started teaching in some of the schools in New York City, and he gathered around some Columbia students. And then he had his theories ready to go. So he started turning them into a sort of a cult,
and they infiltrated the SDS and ran the riots and the protests at Columbia University in the spring of 68 that are generally considered run by, and I can't remember the kid's name, Matt somebody or something, but the LaRouches were better organized, having learned from LaRouche, who was a professional socialist for decades. So then he started the cult in the newspaper. And so he's interviewed, he runs for president in 1976, and he's interviewed around the same time, some cult member interviews him, and LaRouche says that he's a Marxist. And he had put out a book the year before in 1975, Dialectical Economics, a very in-depth study of philosophers in the last 500 years, maybe even back to Plato, to show the relevance of Marx, but also to improve Marx. So he was considered a Marxist, but I mean, he said he was in 75, 76, but by the late 70s, when he's running for president in 1980, the left, whatever left was around, considered him a guy who had gone right-wing and anti-Semitic and was a conspiracy nut. Yet, if you read what he said, he's been consistent all these years. And in some ways, he is still a Marxist. He says the Constitution, the American Constitution, says that you must provide for the welfare of the people, the general welfare. And he quotes that all the time as the role of government is very important. So nowadays, that's almost socialist to make a big deal out of government. So he's still loyal to that vision. He hasn't changed his vision in 40 years. And it's basically, we live in a capitalist culture. We may be Marxists or socialists, but we got to learn to work with the capitalists who will acknowledge the unions, and we must include the unemployed in the unions. Like the unions were against the unemployed, wouldn't really include them. So he's very inclusive, and we use government. We have a national bank to give out credit to worthwhile industries. We do not get run by finance in Wall Street. So that's sort of a Marxist idea, right? To ignore finance or stocks and all that stuff. That's LaRouche's main argument, is that those things are given too much exaggeration and influence in economics, and that's what's wrong. We got to get rid of it. So you listen to some of the young people making their classes now. They're ridiculously naive, according to the normal American awareness, you know. Nobody's going to think of getting rid of Wall Street. But that's what LaRouche says has to be done. So that's a Marxist attitude.
And Bob, was LaRouche's concept of non-linearity, is that a Marxist
no.
perspective?
That's what's different.
LaRouche brings that in, yeah.
He says that, you know, he writes about Marx being influenced by philosophy and that, and he's pretty comprehensive. But LaRouche is revolutionary. He does everything. Art, science, music, economics, philosophy, metaphysics. He's he's basically a philosopher, but he doesn't stay in any specialist. He integrates everything. He has a very interesting system.
Yes.
The harmonics that somebody was mentioning, you know, 8 hours ago.
Yeah.
Is that you, Bert?
Harmonic equilateral. Yes, the harmonic equilateral. And
like he outlines
an Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah,
he's an
it is, really is.
You listen to, you read him, you learn about all kinds of things. So he's very encyclopedic, like Thompson, McLuhan, and Croker are. And he doesn't want power. He says, I would just like to be able to influence policy because they're all so wrong. They need to have a smart person in there. And he says, I'm a smart person. I know what's going on. Now, most people would say LaRouche is a nut, and he's not so smart. But LaRouche has remained pretty consistent and certain about what he was doing. But he is a really a comprehensive encyclopedist.
Yes, that he is.
So he's unique. Like all the holy offices.
Yes.
So, we got 5 minutes. Are we going to go another hour? or have we run the course?
Oh, hell. It's 5 in the morning here. I should probably call it a night, guys. But thanks for the very stimulating conversation, honestly. I can't get it anywhere else. That's my stamp of approval.
Yeah, that's awesome. I agree with you, Clinton. Yeah. Very good conversation.
Yeah, it was great, Clinton.
Yeah, for sure. So
really good. And I've really enjoyed your... I call it a documentary on the evolvement of the evolution of technology and computers.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'd really like to talk to you about that sometime. That was, there were a number of points of discussion.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I'd love to. I'd love to.
A lot of gaps.
Great.
Awesome. A lot of gaps for me.
Awesome. Thanks, Bert. That means a lot. That means it was worth making. That's cool. All right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I don't know, Bert. I feel like I kind of lived through that era and evolved with
it.
So to get your Bert. So we're coming from that perspective where we were there, and now you're putting in it in historical context, and you revealed some of the politics that I wasn't aware of and confirm some of the stuff that I knew was going on. And so,
but then the flip side of that also, just to give you a little, eye on, is that the thing that I've got to go back. I've got a lot of research to do, even though I'm documenting, is that Ion's been touching about cobalt. And I've heard him talk to Chad a few times. There's something with Ion and cobalt and the programming. Ion is, just so you know, Clinton, real quick, is that Ion's pushing Chad to create a programming language. And I've listened, because of my junkyard programming background from, you know, college, and I did some Visual Basic programming in the 80s.
Okay,
you know, kind of computer literate. I've done some of that. But then hear Ion talk to Chad, what he's pushing Chad to do. Ion is pushing Chad, I don't know if you know Chad number one, to create a programming language to pull information out of the cloud, which is quite fascinating to hear them talk.
Phew.
Yeah, Ion says the programmers, whoever, they made a wrong turn at cobalt. They're after cobalt.
Yes.
But I never understood whatever he was trying to say.
They made a wrong turn after cobalt?
Yeah. In the 50s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it has to do with cracking
quantum. Yeah, a language for businesses.
Yes,
well, maybe what he's... Yeah, interesting. It's worth thinking about.
You could ask. Now, you would be the guy to ask Ion about that. Because you'd know the language. You'd know whatever he said.
Object-oriented and simulation languages came out shortly thereafter. That would be my stab. That's what episode 3 of Silicon Encryptus is about, is what object-oriented languages did. They created a whole paradigm for programming as as the computer
the
being a world of simulation that the programmer puts objects into. As opposed to instructing the computer as a single agent, like computer do this, computer do that. That's what a procedural language is like. But then,
and that's interesting.
So after COBOL, my first impression means that they're getting away from computer do this, computer do that, and they're getting into simulation, which is like, this is this sort of object, and this is this sort of object. Now make 20 of this, and make 20 of that, and have them dance together in a pretend imaginary space in my head, right?
Anyway, yeah, just as I'm thinking of that, Clinton. Then we went on to model everything. You know,
hello?
There's object modeling.
You still live?
Can you hear me?
Yep,
still on the air.
Yeah, we're still here. We're still on the air.
Anybody listening?
Yes.
Can't be heard or can't hear us.
Oh, there.
Hanging on every word, Clinton.
Oh, great. You're back. Okay.
Okay.
Hi, guys.
We never left.
You left. You
went
somewhere.
We can hear you, Clinton. Panic. Where is everybody? We're here, Clinton. No, we're here. I can't hear.
Let's go.
Irrational. The irrational burst through Clinton's brain. He held it in for eight hours. He blew it the last minute.
That's your other self.
That's
your other self, Clinton. You were somewhere else.